This is the Transcend Human Podcast, a show dedicated to the spirituality and psychology of the human condition. This year, however, we're taking a detour together as I venture into the world of writing. Each episode documents my journey from the big idea to a complete fiction novel. Join me through the highs and the lows that are sure to be part of this creative process.
Yes, friends, welcome back to the Transcend Human Podcast and the Transcendent Trilogy series that we've been in this year. It has been a bit since we last met. I'm not even going to count the weeks because it's been a really long time. But it is great to be back with you. It is January 2025. Happy New Year, 2025. It's so hard to believe. 5 years doing the Transcend Human Podcast and a full year of doing this newer kind of format where we kind of moved away from some of the felt need content. And I just started posting episodes about my writing journey. So that's been a whole year that we've been doing that. Now, definitely not as many episodes. Back when we were doing the felt need stuff, I was really trying to punch out an episode a week. And now we're down to every month or every couple months. So, but it is what it is. The writing journey is a much longer drawn out process. There's not as much content to talk about as I work through some of the things I'm working through on the novel. But that's where we're headed. So again, here we are. Happy New Year. Brand new episode. Brand new year. But before we dive into content, let's take a minute to catch up since the last time we were together. So apparently we were together before Halloween the last time. So we had Halloween. It was a lot of fun. We had our little previous foster kid with us, took her trick-or-treating, had a lot of fun in Orange County, went to a place in the city of Orange where they literally blocked off the roads for an entire neighborhood. Pretty much every house is decorated. Their owners are all kind of dressed up and handing out candy. Quite the experience. It was a lot of fun. Then we had this little thing called a presidential election. Now, this is not something that I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about. On the one hand, Transcend Human tries to stay away from politics as much as possible. But at the same time, I would say that Transcend Human is politically observant. I'll just use that phrase. In other words, it observes the things that are going on in our country, in our world, in our politics, very closely in terms of the way that it impacts freedom, specifically religious freedom. So the first thing that Transcend Human observed about the election, specifically the morning after the election, is that there were a lot of people celebrating and there were a lot of people crying, but not in a normal way, right? Not like, you know, when your football team beats their arch rival or when your team loses to their arch rival at a sport or something like that. I mean, this was at a whole different level. Those who were hardcore Trump MAGA Republicans, they just believed that they fixed the world, that literally heaven had come to earth. And then there are those on the other side, core Democrats, you know, with beliefs that are a little bit more liberal, that believed that the world was about to end. Now, I know that's sensationalizing it a little bit. There's a good chance that there are a lot of people in the middle who could probably care less about the full polarization that takes place during an election cycle. People who just believe that the country will survive no matter who we elect as president. But when you're speaking about those two polarized camps, those on the far right and the far left, there were definitely some big emotions going on the day after the election. All that to say, we'll see what happens in the next 6 months or so. Next, I had a birthday, so 54 long years old on this planet. But I can't complain. I love some of the things that come with age, things like insight, introspection, reflection, self-reflection, things like that. It's just comforting on some level, and it allows you to kind of live in this crazy polarized time with a little less stress, I think. Thanksgiving. So as a family, we traveled back to Indiana over Thanksgiving, really for two reasons. First, we had a wedding that we went to. And then second, we stuck around for Thanksgiving, which was, you know, a few days later. And so we were there for like a full week. Got to see a lot of people, a lot of family, a lot of friends, and had a good time. And then, of course, traveled back to California for Christmas and New Year's. Pretty straightforward. Didn't do anything really out of the ordinary. All of our kids were here, their significant others. And we just spent a lot of time together as a family. So that was a lot. A lot has happened since we last met. So with that, let's go ahead and jump in. Today's topic, Rethinking Everything. Chapter 1, Working on Act 1. Chapter 2, How Act 1 is Going. And Chapter 3, Rethinking Everything. Chapter 1, Working on Act 1. Simply put, Act 1 is the first quarter of your book, if you're writing a three-act story structure. Now, I know you can write a four-act or a five-act story arc, but there's just something solid about the three-act story structure, probably because it was one of the most common, because it just works, referred to as beginning, middle, end, or perhaps setup, confrontation, and resolution. You get the idea. For me, living in the story grid world for so long now, it refers to the beginning hook, the middle build, and the ending payoff, all ways of describing that three-act structure. But the interesting thing is that these three acts are not equal parts. According to most three-act story articles, and for sure the story grid articles, they break down in the following way. First, the beginning hook, 25%. The second act, or the middle build, 50%. And then the ending payoff, 25%. So you can see that the middle build, or act two, is actually twice the size of the other two. And the story grid breaks that 50% down into two pieces as well, each coming out to 25%. Strange, right? At the end of the day, it's actually more of a four-act structure. But because the two parts in the middle are so closely connected, they simply make up act two. Now, story grid refers to these two parts in the following way. There's middle build one and middle build two. In middle build one, you are working through your progressive complications, and then you reach the turning point of the global story. Then in middle build two, you work your way into the crisis of the global story. If you remember the five commandments of storytelling that we've gone over numerous times, here's how they break out in that three-act story structure. So in the beginning hook, you have your inciting incident. In the middle build, part one, the progressive complication and the turning point. Middle build two, the crisis. And then your ending payoff, or the last 25% of the book, should be your climax and resolution. So what I wanted to focus on today is act one, or the first 25% of the story. Why? Because that's where I'm at. I'm close to finishing up the first 25% of my work in progress. In this case, I've estimated that my book will contain around 80 scenes, so I'm finishing up the first 20. This means that by now, the reader should be 100% clear on the inciting incident, right? Because that's the goal of that first act. Which is interesting, because most of the articles I've read say that you need to get the inciting incident, or the beginning hook of your book, out of the way around the 12% mark. So if that's true, that's only halfway through the first act. Then what is the other 12% for? Well, many say that after you present the inciting incident, you need to move into a build-up that ends with your first plot point, which comes at the 25% mark. The build-up is simply additional information that's needed to help define the conflict while ramping up the tension. Then, at the 25% mark, you provide that first plot point. According to most authors, this is the transition from Act 1 to Act 2, and a key event that moves the protagonist or the team fully into the new world or the new reality. So this is starting to use language from the hero's journey. A hero has received the call to adventure. They've worked through it, potentially even refusing it, but then finally decides to accept the call. And when the call is accepted, there's typically this thing called a threshold that has to be crossed, where you move from the ordinary world that you're used to into an extraordinary world of the adventure. So in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, this is when Frodo accepts the call to leave the Shire and literally crosses the threshold of the Shire, right? When he walks to the edge of the area that's considered the Shire, and crosses that line, he has actually moved into the extraordinary world. In The Wizard of Oz, it's when Dorothy is picked up by the tornado and literally dropped into Oz, and so on and so forth. Chapter 2, How Act 1 is Going. So I said that I'm planning on having roughly 80 scenes in the book. However, this is only an estimate based on the fact that sci-fi and fantasy books often have between 80 and 100 scenes per book. And these often become part of trilogies or longer series. But just because I've written 20 scenes doesn't mean that I'm done with Act 1. What I need to do is to make sure that those 20 scenes did the following. First, it needs to introduce you to the ordinary world of the protagonist, right? Or the protagonists. So it's the world that he or she lives in, what they do, what they're like, etc. Then it needs to introduce you to the inciting world. It needs to introduce the inciting incident. So this is a big event that literally creates conflict for your protagonist or protagonists and requires that they join the adventure. Next, it needs to define a call to adventure. So this is the thing that they are being asked to do or the role that they will play in the rest of the book. Next, there should be some sort of refusal of the call, assuming that it exists, where either the protagonist or the protagonists feel incapable of the call, and that's what they call internal refusal of the call. But there can also be an external refusal of the call, where outside forces somehow are preventing them from answering the call. Next, there should be some sort of meeting with a mentor, where the protagonist or protagonists are mentored by somebody who has knowledge or skill or tools that can help them understand this new world that they'll be entering. And finally, we talked about crossing the threshold, moving from the ordinary world into the new or special world. This is that final event, the first plot point, where something big happens and the protagonist or protagonists realize that they made the move. The adventure is underway, and there may be no going back. Now, that might sound like a lot. Not only have I introduced the typical story structure elements like the first plot point and the inciting incident, but I've also layered in elements from the hero's journey. The ordinary world, the call to adventure, refusal of the call, meeting with a mentor, and crossing the threshold. These are all steps in the hero's journey, but super helpful in setting signposts along the way as you write. For me, it was very helpful to ensure that I wrote scenes that included these elements, but also that there were scenes there to help the reader transition well between them. Now, without leaking my entire story, I wanted to kind of walk through each of those elements and explain how I included it in Act 1. So, Ordinary World, I introduce Jordan Sullivan and Connie Cho. These are two characters that I've kind of listed as my main protagonists. Jordan Sullivan is an archaeologist at Yale who is going through a really difficult time and has developed some really bad habits. Connie Cho is a strong, independent woman who works for the Deep Space Exploration Administration. She lives on a military-style base and is just returning from 2 weeks of leave in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Next, you have the inciting incident. So for Jordan, he's basically taken from his home without his consent, finds himself in Washington, D.C. at the Department of National Security. Connie, after being assaulted at a gas station, barely makes it back to the base, learning that she will be going on a dangerous mission to deep space. Next, the call to adventure. Jordan is asked to be part of a team that will research and investigate a mysterious device in Cairo, Egypt. Connie, who was asked to be part of this deep space mission, and this deep space mission is actually one that had already been attempted a few years prior, one that had ended up in disaster when it was attempted. Refusal of the call. Jordan basically struggles with the ask due to his lack of self-esteem and a drinking problem. Connie, who struggles because the danger involved in the mission to deep space. That's her refusal, is the thoughts that she's having about the mission and about how it could potentially end in disaster the way the first one did. This is really the weakest part of Act One for me. It's an area where I really need to rework a little and ensure that there's an obvious refusal if there is going to be one. Next up, meeting with a mentor. So Jordan meets a member of the Alliance who seems to have a lot of information and really seems to understand the history that they're walking into. Connie gets to know the captain of the DSR better and learns a lot from the stories that he begins to tell her. This is also a weak point and one that could be beefed up a bit. Next, crossing the threshold. So this sort of happens in two places. For Jordan, he crosses the threshold when he agrees to be part of the Trinity exploration team, and he flies from Washington, D.C. to Cairo. But there's also another threshold. In Cairo, Jordan and his team learn more about the device that they're researching, and they're forced to move to the next location. So there's another switching of thresholds there. But in essence, it's still part of that same trip that they're going on to research. As far as Connie goes, she crosses a threshold when she agrees to be part of the DSR-7 mission, and the spacecraft goes from Earth to the U.S. Space Station Alpha. And finally, the first plot point. So a fairly major event that makes it obvious to the protagonist or protagonists that they aren't in Kansas anymore. For Jordan, it's when his team have had no major snags on the trip until they do. A traumatic event forces them to admit that there is something dangerous going on behind the scenes. And as far as Connie, she is asked to communicate with Earth outside of normal channels, thereby going behind the back of the captain. She has to decide who to trust and how she wants to handle the request from the DSEA command. So those are the main elements of the first 20 scenes of my book. Like I said, it doesn't really matter whether there are 20 scenes or not. What matters is that each of these elements is worked into that first 25%. Chapter 3, Rethinking Everything. So where do I go next? The simple answer is, well, just keep writing, right? Start working on Act 2 and the 50% that makes up the middle build. Sounds right to me, but unfortunately, I don't think that's the next right thing, at least not for me personally. For this entire year, I've been looking forward to this break in the action, so to speak, because I assumed that it would be a really good place to start or to stop and take a pause, a place that would allow me to share my work with other people. Up until this point, I've held most of this pretty close to the vest. I did let my daughters read the prologue, which was actually a mistake because it didn't really, well, first of all, I didn't really explain to them what it was. I just sent them, gave them access and let them read it. And they started responding with a lot of criticism about the way that the first two scenes of the book started, which made 100% sense if those were the first two chapters of the book. However, they were the prologue, and I never told them that. So a lot of that first feedback that I got was a little convoluted because I didn't explain it well. Then I read a huge chunk of it to my wife. This was a few months ago, and it only gave her a small taste of what that first scene or that first 25% would be like. But it was fun to read that to her and to kind of get some of her first ideas or first recommendations on that content. But my hope was to finish up Act 1 and then basically let it go. Literally, send it out to a core group of readers, mainly family, some close friends, and then let them tell me what they thought. Right? Tell them it's Act 1, it's a first draft, and basically ask for honest feedback. Things like, did it hold your interest? Did it keep you turning the pages? Did you connect with a protagonist? If so, why and how? If not, why not? What did you like? What did you not like? What did you have a hard time understanding? Were there parts that sounded naive or hokey or cliche? And you know, things like that. I think it's a pretty good list to start from. And that's really it. I truly believe that this was my next step in the process. Send it out, let people read it, take their feedback, and then start working on Act 2 with the recommendations and suggestions front of mind. For example, if someone said, oh, I really love Connie Cho, but I'm having a really hard time connecting with her. In Act 2, I could spend a lot more time defining her, who she is, the things she likes, the things she doesn't like, her hopes, her fears, and a bit more of her backstory. Eventually, this could get beefed up in Act 1 as well, but at least I would be adding to the 75% of the book while still writing the first draft. So there you go. That was my plan. Obviously, you want people to say, yes, it was amazing. I loved every minute of it. When can I get Act 2? But the opposite is also helpful. When someone says, you totally lost me when you started explaining how a spacecraft docks at a US space station in the future, I don't really care. I just want you to tell me they docked. Then move on to the people interacting on the space station. Ouch. Hard to hear on some level, but at the same time, valid. Maybe I was in love with this piece of world building and I just really wanted to share how much I loved it. But for the reader, it's too much content, too much exposition, info dumping, telling versus showing. Getting back to the dialogue and allowing the info to be injected in smaller chunks would be the next best thing. Or a better thing, I guess I should say. So like I said, this is what I'm excited to hear, both the good and the bad and the ugly. And my hope was that this would fuel my imagination as I entered the world of Act 2. But at some point, those doubts started to creep in again. In my previous episode, I think I talked about, or maybe it was a couple episodes, I talked about moving away from the trilogy as my big idea in order to start with something smaller, more simple, a one-off novel to basically cut my teeth on before I really kept working on this trilogy. And I talked about how my wife kind of agreed, but at the same time, she pushed me to basically do whatever I felt was right. And if I truly felt that my big idea was the story I was supposed to be writing, then who has the right to tell me otherwise? So I dove back in and I kept working on Act 1. But at some point, the conversation came back up in my mind, and two things really pushed me over the edge. First, one of the standalone books that I had thought about moving to suddenly became a lot clearer to me. I realized that if I could just change the location of that story, it would make it a lot easier to write, and it would ensure that readers better connect with the character and the story. And number two, I realized something about the way that I was writing the trilogy. I was becoming an exposition machine. Sure, I have dialogue, I have character development, but sprinkled in there are huge blocks of me building the world that I want to build, explaining technical things like the DSEA campus and how it was set up, all the buildings, how a spaceship moves from building to building in a process, describing the three spaceships that the DSEA built and how each of them is used. And that's when I stopped, put my pen down, and had a come to Jesus moment. Was I just forcing things because this was my big idea? Was I really ready to take on such a large project? And unfortunately for me, I keep going back to the same answer. No, probably not. You probably aren't ready for this big of a project. But you could be if you just practice on something less complex, like a story that focused on a single protagonist. In a fairly common location with a pretty simple plot line. with one main protagonist, one main antagonist, or force of antagonism, what would that look like? Would it give me the experience I needed to write something bigger in the future? Possibly. Probably. And so I rethought everything, right then and there. Now, I can't lie, this new project is not entirely new, and it's not entirely standalone. It's one of the standalones I thought up back in the first moment of crisis. A story based on a character in my work in progress. A character that doesn't really come into play until late in the second book, and then plays a major role in book three. So for me, this is kind of the best of both worlds. It will be a single novel with much more simplicity, right? Much easier to write. It'll allow me to play with some of the more traditional story structure elements, but at the same time, it's set in the same world as my work in progress, which allows me to do a number of things. First, I can use the same world building techniques that I've already come up with and the same world building concepts. I can introduce ideas and concepts along the way, which will foreshadow the trilogy to come. I can spend a fair amount of time creating a secret society that I've called the Travelers in this book, so I won't have to do that in the trilogy. And I can focus on character development and story arc for one main character instead of multiple characters at the same time. Like I said, it's kind of a win-win, except that it still feels like I failed. Failed at the big idea. And it feels like I'm starting over without a single sentence on paper. But I believe it's the next right thing for me. So I have to be true to myself and I have to do it. Over the holidays, and this is probably why I didn't do an episode for quite a while, because I had a lot to think about. I spent a fair amount of time prepping for this reality. I created the world, I fleshed out the protagonist, I came up with timelines and how this story fits into the larger world of the trilogy, and I started to define the story arc, the change that I want to see in my protagonist throughout the book. My next step is to think through the entire storyline or plot structure that would work to get me started. Maybe it's fleshing out the 20 skeletal scenes from StoryGrid, or maybe it's fleshing out each of the 12 elements of the hero's journey. Or maybe I find something totally new, something that speaks to me in terms of setting up a single novel with one protagonist. I found a YouTube video recently by a guy named John Matthew Fox. His channel is called Book Fox, and I put a link in the show notes in case you want to watch this video. The video is called Five Story Shapes That Will Change Your Book Forever. And he really walks through just five simple ways to plot your novel. The first he calls the Freytag Pyramid. The second is the 7-point plot structure. Third is the snowflake method. Fourth is the embryo method. And fifth is the save the cat method. Now, like I said, I'm not going to bore you with the details, but if you're interested, go check out the video. It's in the show notes, and it's literally 9 minutes long, so super easy to read through or watch. But basically, five more ways to think through the structure of your story so that you can hit the ground running and write through the loose structure that you come up with. And like I said, that's where I find myself. Let's land the plane. I think that's a pretty good place to end for today. What I really wanted to do, I wanted to catch you up on what I had been doing. So, you know, up until a certain point, I was working on Act One of my trilogy, working hard, knocking out those scenes, trying to get to that 25% mark. But then, like I said, I hit that crisis moment where I'm like, this is so big. This is so big for me. And what if I downshifted and found a story that I could tell that was pretty simple? It can be part of the trilogy megaverse, if you will. But it might be the best scenario for me right now. So that's what I'm doing. I just wanted to walk through that with you. So thanks for sticking with me as I continue to kind of struggle through my work in progress, the best way to get things written. In this case, that may mean not writing anything at all when it comes to the trilogy, at least not yet. So as always, I hope whatever you're working on is going smoothly or if you're in a similar spot to me, I hope that you have the courage to evaluate things and make changes in real time the way I am. But whatever the case, have a great week, friends. As always, thanks for hanging out and keep transcending human.